Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 17th of August, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. We will talk with the actors involved in this week's Whirligig show at the Rendezvous. We'll get the details about tomorrow's Governor's Picnic with Kathy Romick, and Beth Weigel will be here to get us in shapes for this month's Beat the Odds round. We'll also hear a few bear stories. At Writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. For the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers. Forecast for tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers and high temperatures around 60 degrees. Thursday looks like rain is likely, and Friday looks like rain is likely with low temperatures around 51 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Menominee Tribe of Wisconsin says it's reached a settlement with federal officials that revives a plan to open a gaming complex in Kenosha. Chuck Kornbach of Wisconsin Public Radio reports the proposal still faces hurdles.
A couple of months ago, the Interior Department announced it was withdrawing a Bush administration memo that made it tougher for tribes to open off-reservation casinos. That led the Menominee tribe to start talking with the federal government about resolving a lawsuit against a federal rejection of the Menominee's plan to build a large gaming facility on the site of the former Kenosha dog racing track. Menominee tribal chairman Randall Chevalier says a settlement has now been reached.
We're very pleased with this settlement, and we're very pleased with the project, and we look forward to it moving forward for the benefit of the state of Wisconsin as well as for the tribe.
Under the settlement, Interior has agreed to take a fresh look at the Menominee's proposal. Chevalier says he hopes Interior decides the tribe needs the financial shot in the arm.
We're a very poor tribe. We have a lot of unmet needs here in this tribe, a lot of infrastructure that we have to maintain.
But the Forest County Pottawatomie Tribe, which runs a lucrative casino 30 miles away in Milwaukee, says the earlier federal review suggested the Menominee could build the new casino on Menominee land in northeast Wisconsin. The Pottawatomie are also raising concerns about the Menominee's financial partner, the Mohegan Tribe in Connecticut. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker would also have to approve the Kenosha Casino. A Walker spokesman says the governor will evaluate the plan after federal officials complete their review. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach in Milwaukee.
The White Mountain Apache Tribe in Arizona is celebrating the opening of its new native plant nursery. A ribbon-cutting ceremony is being held today on the reservation. In 2009, the tribe received a more than $2 million federal grant to design, construct, and operate the nursery. The project created jobs and will provide plants to support restoration efforts on the Fort Apache Reservation and surrounding lands, which includes lands devastated by wildfires. The groundbreaking of the project was held last October. Forestry grant coordinator Rachel Infield told National Native News then she hoped the nursery will spark interest in the community to get involved in agriculture.
But I would really like to see it become also a learning opportunity or a facility that will not only grow plants and unite a community to get involved back in agricultural type activities, because we don't have that here anymore. We used to have orchards, we used to do a lot of irrigated farming, and we just don't have that here. So I'd like to see it go beyond just the forest products and branch out into other types of products and unite the community, but also provide jobs, of course, but also provide opportunities for young kids. You know, get them out here seeing something positive, learn something new.
The new greenhouse is expected to produce more than 100,000 seedlings in its first year of operation, and double that in the second year and years to come. The Aleutic Museum Archaeological Repository in Kodiak, Alaska receives national accreditation. On Tuesday, the museum announced it had earned accreditation from the American Association of Museums, certifying that the museum has the highest standards of professional practice. Reviewers from the association visited the museum last April. According to the Aleutic Museum, the review states the museum is a leader among Native and tribal museums nationally and among all museums in Alaska. It is now the second accredited tribal repository in the United States and seventh in Alaska. The museum's bid for the accreditation started 14 years ago. The initial certification will last 15 years. The Aleutic Museum preserves the cultural traditions of the Aleutic people. During this month in 1935, the Indian Arts and Crafts Act was passed by Congress. Its purpose was to promote the economic welfare of tribes and individuals through the development of Indian arts and crafts and to expand the market. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon, where our first guests are members of the group Mod Carousel performing this weekend at the Rendezvous. Seneca Harper, The Luminous Pariahs, Paris Original, and also Trojan Original. Thank you very much for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Seneca Harper, you lived in Juneau for a number of years.
I did, yeah. I grew up in Juneau, and then I found myself in Seattle studying theater and moved on to ecology, and then I stumbled across the fantastical world of burlesque a few years ago.
So you're also known as The Luminous Pariah. Do people call you Loom? Or?
People usually call me Loomy or Luminous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did you get that persona?
I chose the name Pariah at first because it sort of described how I was feeling at the time as far as my views of ecology while I was in theater, as being sort of a social outcast. And then when I started to perform by that name, people kept saying, Pariah, that's so negative. You definitely don't seem like a negative person. You're so light and bubbly and you're always smiling. So I chose Luminous Pariah, and when I introduce myself to people, I usually say, hi, I'm Luminous, and oftentimes they'll say, yes, you are.
Also in the studio are Paris Original and Trojan Original. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about your names, please?
Well, I wanted to pick something that reflected my ancestry, which is very French, so I was drawn to the name Paris, and that's kind of where it came from.
And then I'm Trojan, Paris's twin brother in real life. And so when I started doing burlesque, I wanted to tie our family relationship, even with our alter egos. And so I kept the last name Original, but I wanted to have a very obviously masculine first name. And so nothing quite screams that like Trojan does.
How did the group Mod Carousel form?
Mod Carousel formed, was it 2 years ago now? When we were all performing, and we were in a show together where we created a trio piece, and we seemed to work pretty well together for the most part, and the final product was great. And so we thought, well, let's, you know, grab a few other people together, and we should call ourselves some sort of name, and what if we try to become a troupe and perform all together on a regular basis? And so far, it's worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Could you define the term burlesque and also burlesque, how it relates to Mod Carousel?
Definitely. Burlesque is traditionally, it means to parody something. So even a comedy act can technically be a burlesque. The way the word has changed into the 1900s or late 1900s, it turned out to be more of a cabaret act that involved singing, possibly dancing, some witty comedy. The most famous is Gypsy Rose Lee, who didn't actually do a whole lot of striptease. She didn't remove any of her clothing, maybe a glove here and there. And then through the ages, it kind of transitioned into more about removing the clothing and revealing what is underneath. The way that relates to Mod Carousel is we call ourselves neo-burlesque, because classical burlesque nowadays is very much about glamour, and it's very much about showmanship and pageantry. We have a little bit of that, but Mod Carousel is more about physical theater and storytelling and providing the audience with something exciting and something of substance rather than just exciting costumes or just the removal of those costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And you spent the month of July in London performing as well.
We did. It was very enjoyable.
How did that gig work out?
We were connected with the photographer Greg Holloway in Seattle, and he took he really likes photographing burlesque performers because we all make really silly faces and we all have very fantastical costumes, and he wanted to do a photo exhibit in Seattle, which is where he lives now, and an exhibit in London, which is where he had lived previously, and he asked if we could use if he could use some of our photos, and he said of course, and I met with him to sign a waiver, you know, saying it's okay if you use my photo. He said, well, what if we eventually took you guys over to London and you performed in this show? I said, that'd be great, not really thinking of anything actually coming out of it, but it did, and they brought us over there and we performed 5 shows a week for 4 weeks in July, and it was intense, but it was a lot of fun. It was amazing.
And it's so successful that you got invited back.
Yeah, we'll be back in May.
Paris, what was the show like for you?
It was great. It was a little bit intense. British audiences are very different. They're more reserved and quiet. So it was a different experience than a traditional show here, the more typical experience. But overall, it was really great.
And Trojan?
I can't complain. It was a lot of fun.
Randy, you'll be performing at the Rendezvous this weekend on the 18th, 19th, and 20th at 8 o'clock on most nights, and 10 o'clock for Friday and Saturday nights as well. What's going to be happening this weekend? What's the show going to consist of?
The show is going to be our separate antics. We have 9 solo performances, so each of us will do 3 solos. And we have 2 trio numbers and 2 duets throughout the show. So each of them is a little story, a little miniature story. It has a beginning, middle, and end. Each of them has a rather exciting costume, most of which are handmade by us. We each have our different specialties as far as costume design. Very different types of music. It's really all over the map musically.
Yeah, and the acts are all over the map too. We have some very silly comedy pieces. We have some more serious social commentary. Really mysterious dance. It's all over the place. It's fun for everyone.
Yeah. For instance, I start out with one that I come on stage wearing dirty extra tufts and muddy Carhartt and a plaid shirt, you know, and a vest, and I carry a fish. And I start out as a fisherman. And in Seattle or other cities, I think this really shocks people because they come to a burlesque show, they expect glamour, yet they see that. So I think that's just a good example of how different what we do is than your classical burlesque.
Tell me more about the costumes.
This is Paris's realm right here.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at making costumes, I guess. Well, there's lots of hidden tricks about how things work, but they're very flashy. Some of them are very fantastical, lots of huge pieces and sparkles everywhere, bright colors.
What Sylvain, Paris is being really, really humble about is that he's a costuming wizard, and you will be freaking amazed at his costumes. Mine are much more on the simple, non-elaborate, very pedestrian end.
I think I'm somewhere in between. I don't sew very well, so I make everything very sculptural. For instance, towards the end of the show, you'll see me in a huge recycled plastic costume that's sort of amazing that I fit it in my suitcase to get here. But it's all made out of recycled polyethylene. And then, of course, the fisherman, it looks like I'm wearing muddy clothing. And then I do a bird of paradise, which is mostly made out of recycled T-shirt fabric that's all very vivid oranges, greens, yellows, and purples.
The name of the show is Whirligig. How did that come about?
Whirligig came about when we were sitting around our kitchen table thinking about names that could describe like a dream or some sort of falling under a spell. And I don't remember which one of us came up with Whirligig. Was it you, Paris?
I think so. I don't know. I think it was a lucky find in the thesaurus.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
the thesaurus.
Whirligig gets performed Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Rendezvous. I imagine since it's in a bar, it's not good for all ages.
Correct. Yeah, 21 plus. If you're 18, you can talk to the bar and possibly have a parent, guardian. If you go with them, you can, but we prefer 21 plus.
And how much are tickets available?
Tickets are $10 in advance at Hearthside Books or the Rendezvous, or $12 at the door.
I've been talking to the Luminous Pariah, Paris Original, and Trojan Original about the Whirligig show by Maud Carousel. Do you have a website?
We do. It's maudcarousel.com.
All right, thank you very much for coming down the station today. Have a good show.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, August the 17th, 2011.
It was on this date, 1982, the first compact discs for commercial release were manufactured in Germany. CDs originally designed to store and playback sound recordings, later modified to store data. The first CD commercially produced, sold on this date, was ABBA's 1981 album, The Visitors. It's the birthday of Evan S. Connell, 1924, Kansas City, author of the novels Mrs. Bridge and Mr. Bridge. It's the birthday of Ted Hughes, the poet, born in Yorkshire, 1930. It's the birthday of Jonathan Franzen, born Western Springs, Illinois, outside Chicago, 1959. Grew up in Webster Groves, Missouri, suburb of St. Louis, studied German at Swarthmore, went to Berlin on a Fulbright, came home, started on his first novel, The 27th City, wrote 8 hours a day during the week, worked as a research assistant in a seismology lab at Harvard on weekends. The seismology was material for his second novel, Strong Motion. Third novel was The Corrections. Took him 8 years to write, a big bestseller in 2001. Most recent novel was Freedom, came out last year. It's the birthday of the mystery writer Steve Hawkinsmith, born Louisville, 1968, best known for his Holmes on the Range series of cowboy mysteries. It's the birthday of Nicola Krauss, New York City, 1974, went to NYU where she met Emma McLaughlin, both of them working part-time as nannies while they were in school, and together they wrote The Nanny Diaries, a novel, came out in 2002, satirizing the wealthy of the Upper East Side of Manhattan from the point of view of the nanny. It was a big commercial hit, made into a movie, 2007, starring Scarlett Johansson. They've co-written 4 more books, including a sequel, The Nanny Returns. It's the birthday of the Irish writer Oliver St. John Gogarty, Dublin, 1878. He was a surgeon and a throat specialist, but he preferred writing poetry and plays and semi-autobiographical novels like As I Was Going Down Sackville Street and Tumbling in the Hay and It Isn't This Time of Year at All. He was a sort of friend of James Joyce and the inspiration for the character Buck Mulligan in Ulysses, much to Dr. Gogarty's annoyance. He did not take James Joyce seriously as a writer. He liked Yeats much better, so it irritated him when people reminded him of who Buck Mulligan really was. Here's a poem for today by John Engels, At Summer's End. Early August, and the young butternut is already dropping its leaves. The nuts thud and ring on the tin roof. The squirrels are everywhere. Such richness. It means something to them that this tree should seem so eager to finish its business. The voice softens. A word becomes air the moment it is spoken. You finger the limp leaves. Precisely to the degree that you have loved something, a house, a woman, a bird, this tree, anything at all, you are punished by time. Like the tree, I take myself by surprise. At Summer's End, a poem by John Engels, from his collection From Sinking Creek, published by the Lions Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, where your mobile device can turn into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app. You can find it online at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Time is 3:19 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Kathy Romick, who's the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce here in town, and she's going to talk to us about the governor's picnic, which is coming up tomorrow. Kathy, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So the governor's picnic, what's the inspiration behind the thought?
Well, you know, the governor's picnic has been a long tradition throughout the state of Alaska. And just this is our third year here. When Governor Parnell took office, he wanted to know when the Juneau governor's picnic was. And we said, well, we've never had one here. And he said, well, that's not right. Let's have one. So we got together a group of community members, and this is the third year, and it's been very successful. The community likes it, and it's a great way to, you know, get up close with the governor for people that don't have those opportunities in their daily life. So it's been very, very successful, and we're very pleased to be a part of it.
And it's happening in three other communities as well?
They do it in Anchorage. They do it in Fairbanks and the Matsu Valley, somewhere out there, too. So,
What's on the menu?
Oh, we have the best menu of all the governor's picnics. We have grilled fresh salmon and hot dogs, chips, cookies, sodas, and tons of wonderful local sponsors who provided all the goodies for this. I especially, you know, like to mention the fishermen and the fisheries that give us the salmon and actually prepare it right there on site. I see Straight Seafood, Taku Smokeries, Alaska Glacier Seafood, United Fishermen of Alaska, United Southeast Alaska Gill Netters Association, and the fishing vessel Makia Bay. And these guys, you know, they plan ahead. We ask them ahead of time, and we're always afraid they're not going to be able to do it again, and they do. They pull it off every year, and it's just great.
Is there a secret recipe?
Oh, it's a secret recipe. They won't even, yeah. I mean, it's a great recipe, and I don't think they've ever divulged it.
Does the governor have something favorite he likes to serve?
The governor and the first lady will be serving the hot dogs.
All right. Any numbers from last year?
You know, last year we didn't have as many people, or we just couldn't keep as close a track because we had the tent, which was great, but it was a little bit, we couldn't, it separated the activities. So this year we're going back to the far end of Sabico Park there at the end where the two covered shelters are, and we're putting a few tents up. We have several different things, entertainment for kids. We're real excited about you, sir, have been kind enough to say you'll come and do balloons for the kids again this year. That'd be great. We're going to have horseshoes, beanbag toss, a ball toss, lots of kid-friendly activities. And as some of the departments within the state of Alaska have also said, you know, they wanted to participate too. So I know for sure that DOT is going to be there with some type of heavy equipment to show off to the not only to the kids but for the adults who are interested in that sort of thing. And I think we have Department of Commerce doing some activities for kids. Just a lot of things going on.
Must be nice for the governor just to sit there and say hi to people without having to talk about sensitive political issues.
I know. That's what I think, too. It's just one of those days that you can just relax. The governor gets up, and Senator Egan is going to introduce the governor, and he'll give a welcoming speech to everyone. And it's all the commissioners are going to be there. I think we have all of them this year, and they'll all be serving the food and just visiting with the people.
And what time does all this start and end?
It starts at 4:30 tomorrow until 7:30. So I hope we get a good crowd. The first year, I think we had just right around 4,000, and we probably shopped at every store in town. We had to run and get more. So last year we were prepared and had a few less than we did the first year. So we're hoping for a good crowd again this year.
All right, Kathy, thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I just want to say thank you to all the sponsors who, you know, even ExxonMobil, you know, has helped us put on this year's picnic, Alaska USA, Hecla, and Kensington both have contributed, and Alaska Oil and Gas Association this year contributed as well for our picnic. So Willie's Marine, Juneau Parks and Rec, especially a big thank you to them for preparing the park area for us. They do a great job with flowers and helping us put up our signs and stuff. Alaska Marine Lines, R&S Pumping, Subway. I mean, we just have nobody. I mean, every time we go out for donations for this, nobody ever says no. It's just great. So.
Well, it takes a community to feed a community.
It does. It does. And it's a fun event, so hopefully we'll get a good crowd tomorrow no matter what the weather.
Kathy, thank you so much for coming down the station.
Thanks, Jeff.
All the the nation sitting on a blanket, having a picnic, the picnic of the world. There's Holland and there's Poland and there's Iceland and there's Thailand. There's England and there's Scotland and America, that's my land. There's Canada and Panama, there's Sweden and Aruba, Korea, Tanzania, not to mention Greece and Cuba. Mali, Bali, Mexico and Martinique, Hungary, Turkey, India and Mozambique, Haiti, Fiji, Israel and Senegal, Kenya, Ghana, Jordan and Nepal, all sitting on the same big blanket with the same big basket full of sandwiches and deviled eggs. We're all drinking from the same big thermos at the same big picnic. It's the picnic of the world. There's Pakistan, Afghanistan, Malaya, and Nigeria. There's Luxembourg and Liechtenstein. Let's not forget Liberia. There's Paraguay and Uruguay. There's Russia and there's Syria. Sudan, Japan, Iraq, Iran, and what about Algeria? Finland, Greenland, Switzerland, and Vietnam. Denmark, Norway, Swaziland, and Suriname. Chile, China, Guatemala, Trinidad. Tonga, Tonga, Portugal, and Chad. All sitting on the same big blanket with the same warm soda as the ants crawl on our sandwiches. We're all swatting at the same mosquitoes, eating burned up burgers at the picnic of the world. There's Gambia and Zambia and Laos and Guyana. There's Libya, Namibia, Andorra and Botswana. Then there's Singapore and Ecuador, El Salvador and Lebanon, Albania, Romania. There's Burma and Bhutan. All sitting on the same big blanket with the same big basket full of problems and annoyances. But all knowing at the deep down heart of it, we're all a part of it. The picnic of the picnic of the picnic of the world.
Tonight on 360 North, part two of Where the River Matanuska Flows highlights the history of the colonization of the Matanuska Valley. That's at 8 p.m. Then at 9, watch Steamer Nenana, Last Lady of the River, and delve into the rich history and rebuilding of one of the iconic river sternwheelers of interior Alaska. Wild Neighbors follows at 9:30, along with other great programs, tonight on 360 North.
Time is 3:27, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are Beth Weigel and also Nicole Hollingstand here to talk about the Beat the Odds race, which is coming up on August 27th at Riverbend School, at 9 in the morning. Thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thanks, Jeff. Absolutely.
So, Beat the Odds, can you tell me about the run if you want to, please?
Well, this is the 20th anniversary of the Beat the Odds race, so obviously it started about 20 years ago, and it was actually started by a woman named Kathy Brissett, and she was a breast cancer survivor and wanted to do something to give back to the community. So she started this race, and eventually the Rotary took it up and ran it for a few years, and then eventually the Rotary gave this event to the Cancer Connection as our primary fundraiser for our services and programs that we do through Cancer Connection.
Tell me about Cancer Connection.
Well, Cancer Connection is based here in Juneau, and one of the things I really love about Cancer Connection as a nonprofit organization, they're first and foremost a resource center for cancer survivors, friends and family, loved ones, anybody who would like to gather information who might be facing this disease. We also do have programs available for residents of Southeast Alaska, including travel assistance, where they can fill out a form and receive reimbursement up to $750 this year for travel expenses. We know that Southeast patients generally have to fly out of this region to get the kind of care for their illness that they need. We also have a really great program that we started this year that offers a Seattle apartment for rent through Cancer Connection. Again, we know that this is a tremendous need in the patient community to have a place to live that is reasonably priced while you may be in Seattle for treatment. So,
and it's right at the Hospital Hill area, so it's very close and convenient to all the places that you would be going for treatment or checkups or things like that.
Exactly. It's people can find out all of the information they'd like to on our programs online. www.cancerconnectionak.org has information with the forms that you need to fill out, the phone numbers to call if you're interested in the reimbursement program or the apartment. And we really take a lot of pride in being able to provide these resources to residents of Southeast Alaska. We know there are other programs in other regions, but if you're a resident of Southeast Alaska, you know, please check into Cancer Connection and see how we can help.
One of the other things we also offer is a monthly cancer support group meeting, and it usually meets the third Tuesday of every month, and we have a good group of men going right now. So, a lot of people think, only women want to talk about, going through cancer and getting through those sorts of things. But we have a lot of men who also want to work on talking about the issue, and that also pairs up then with a program we have called Let's Talk, and where we, if you don't want to come to a support group and maybe, deal with a lot of people and you just want to talk one-on-one with somebody else who's had a similar diagnosis as yours, we can pair you up with someone who has gone through that experience as well.
What are some of the common issues or maybe uncommon issues that people have together?
Well, I would say that, a lot of family members oftentimes aren't quite sure what they can do to help support someone who's going through cancer. So we do get a lot of calls from family members and loved ones who want to know, what are some of the things I can do? How can I help? How can I get more information? Usually that's the first thing when you're diagnosed with cancer, is that you're just so overwhelmed by the unknown of what's going to be coming up next, that information need is a big one at first. And then I think, generally talking about what's going on, you're learning a whole new language when you enter into this sort of medical world of cancer and any sort of medical diagnosis. You're learning all kinds of new, tests that you're getting and diagnoses and treatments. And so, the one way I know I made a lot of sense out of the situation was just to keep talking about it and rehearsing that what's going on in your life thing.
And, the really wonderful thing about the Beat the Odds race for breast cancer is we have hundreds of people who turn out, who can celebrate with each other, who can make progress towards future funding, supporting a local resource. It's really, it's the joyous side of what we do. And we encourage everybody in the community, to try to make the effort to come out. It's a 5K run or a 2-mile walk. So we absolutely offer alternatives for people who, feel up to a challenge or just would like to take a stroll with people who have been touched by cancer.
And we also get a lot of we get a lot of door prize donations, I guess. So we have a fun, raffle for everyone that's registered, and people can win prizes from all the very generous supporters that we have that have donated things.
I guess I want to get back to what a family member, a friend, a close friend, discovers a friend of theirs has cancer, and family member, what's some advice you have to help them deal with it?
We can speak from our own experience, certainly. Beth and I are both cancer survivors ourselves. And I think the main message that we try to convey is that it's okay to talk about this. When you get the diagnosis, a lot of people have a reflex to try to protect their loved ones against this information or the impact it might have on their life. But gathering information is gathering knowledge and power, and being able to talk about it, even if you don't know what to say. More than anything, I hear people say, I don't know what to say. I want to reach out to this person. I have no idea what words to use. It almost doesn't matter what you have to say. The outreach is what's important. Being able to just let somebody know that you're there, to let them know that you care about them and that you support them in any way you can. Just starting that dialogue can be so critical to healing. And when you start that journey, you're going to have a lot of battles to face. So,
yeah. And I would add to that, too, that, in my own experience, and I think probably in yours as well, when you get a diagnosis, suddenly there's a lot of decisions that need to be made. And there's always this feeling of urgency that, because it is, this idea that, your life is in danger from this disease, that there's all these decisions to be made. There's a certain sense of urgency. And I think my advice is that, yes, you want to make your decisions in a very efficient manner and try and get those things figured out right away and not avoid making decisions. But at the same time, I always tell people to don't do anything too quickly, too soon, and just really let that, go through a process of talking about it, thinking about what are the options. If you need a second opinion, go ask, get a second opinion or a third opinion or whatever that might be. That there doesn't need to be quite that knee-jerk reaction that I've got to go do this right now, right this second, and deal with it. Just take a minute,
reflect on it and then go through a process that's a little bit more methodical to make your decisions.
It seems to me like the amount of advice, when friendly or not exactly, I guess all friendly advice is overwhelming at some point.
That's true. That is true. And at the end of the day, nobody is going to be a better advocate for your health care than you as the patient, managing this information, processing this information. Everybody's going to have an opinion. Everybody has a story. This disease is regrettably so widespread, so many people are touched by this, that oftentimes you find yourself sort of mediating stories that people have to share with you, but just that act of sharing, that can be healing, in itself. And there is absolutely no harm also in saying, I need to process this on my own. I'll be reaching out to you when I need your support. But again, just letting people know you're there for them can make a world of difference.
Yeah, I would agree 100% that there's no wrong way to sort of deal with cancer. If you need to talk to somebody, then that's the best way for you. If you need to sort of set your boundaries and say, okay, I do need this, this, and this, but I don't need people here this other time, that's fine too. So, what feels best to the person who's newly diagnosed and the family members that are surrounding them, I think is how that is best processed.
And so many people today, we get busy with our lives. We are individuals in a larger society with our own goals and our own motivations. When you're diagnosed, you instantly become a member of a very large community. And people don't always appreciate what can be gained from just that sense of fellowship with others. So again, an event like Beat the Odds, maybe if you're newly diagnosed or you know somebody who's newly diagnosed, you're relatively new to this community, and you just sort of want to know who some of the folks in Juneau are, what's out there for you. Again, this is a great chance to kind of break into that and meet some people and start the dialogue.
I'm talking with Beth Weigel and Nicole Hollingstein about the Beat the Odds Race Against Cancer on the 27th of this month at River Bend School, starting at 9 in the morning. Give me some numbers if you could. How about how many people are expected to show up?
I think we generally expect at least 300.
Yeah, in fact, we order about 300 shirts every year. People can pre-register at different locations in town. They can pre-register at JRC, the Alaska Club, at NAO, and at Foggy Mountain. You can also come up, show up the day of the event and register there. If you pre-register, 13 and under, it's $20. 14 and over, it's $25. Day of the race, it's $30. We roll 300 T-shirts, and they're always gone at the end of the day.
That's right. And there is sort of a thing about the T-shirts every year. there are some people that collect them and that have been to every single one of the Beat the Odds races. So they're first come, first serve. So people are always very hot to get the T-shirts.
Right. And if you can pre-register, that sort of helps secure your T-shirt order.
And people get pledges?
No, that's not a pledge race. It's just an entry fee to do the race, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's kind of nice in that sense that you can come and, provide your contribution with your small fee. There's no obligation to sort of tap into your friends or try to raise funds for this. But it is the primary fundraising event for Cancer Connection, and we're always so appreciative of the proceeds that it brings back to the organization.
And the route starts at River Bend and ends up at River Bend as well?
Right, and I believe the running race, they head out, cross over to the Brotherhood or the CAX trail there, and I think they go to the back loop and then all the way back across and around through the Safeway, zone there. And the walking people go towards the other direction. So the walkers won't be feeling like they're having lots of runners around them or vice versa.
Nicole, you mentioned where people can register. Could you repeat that information, please?
Absolutely. At JRC, the Alaska Club, NAO, and at Foggy Mountain. They can also, I believe, find a registration form on the Cancer Connection website that they can print out, download, and fill it out. If they don't have a chance to pre-register, if they bring that registration form already filled out the day of the race, it will actually really speed things up.
Right.
And if people need that website one more time, please?
www.cancerconnectionak.org.
All right, anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
It's going to be a great, fun day, so be sure to come out and
either walk or run, and we also have lots of door prizes, like I said, so it should be a lot of fun.
And generally speaking, it's all wrapped up and over by 11 a.m., so just a few hours in your morning, you know, come and celebrate with us. We hope to see you there.
Across Southeast Alaska, Hope Community Resources provide support that result in meaningful outcomes in the lives of people who experience intellectual and developmental disabilities. When families seek support, Hope is available to provide services that include residential, vocational, and recreational opportunities. Visit hopealaska.org and discover a world of possibilities. This message is brought to you by Hope Community Resources, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams.
North Alaska way, saw the strangest animal walk through the woods one day. Right there and then he took a pen and wrote the folks a note. They chuckled when they got the news, for this is what he wrote. Quote, Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear. Fuzzy Wuzzy had no hair. Fuzzy Wuzzy wasn't Fuzzy Wuzzy.
Fuzzy, Fuzzy.
Fuzzy Wuzzy lost his hair in a North Pole barber chair. Fuzzy Wuzzy wasn't fuzzy wuzzy. They say that all the seals in Hudson Bay envied Fuzzy's fuzz, but when they cut his fur away, he wasn't what he used to was, 'cause Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear. Fuzzy Wuzzy had no hair. Fuzzy Wuzzy wasn't Fuzzy Wuzzy.
Hi, Jeff. This is King. I'm calling you with my bear story, and here it is. I've had three encounters with bears, and most of them were very interesting, except for one. And that's the one was where I first met Sarah Palin. As you know, I live behind the governor's mansion, and one morning I was walking to work, and I saw a group of people standing on Calhoun Street looking down the hill where, you know, where the stairs are that go from Calhoun Street down to Willoughby. I was walking down the street, and I saw these people looking down the hill into the trees and grassy area, and they were saying, I walked up to one of them and says, well, that's, what are you looking at? And they said, well, there's a bear down there. And then, oh, yeah, there's a bear down there. So me and the other people started looking down, and then guess who happens to walk up with her two children? It's Sarah Palin. It was like the second time I'd ever met her, and I actually got to talk to her for a few minutes this time. Anyway, she walks up to me, and he says, what are you looking at? And I says, oh, I'm looking at a bear. So I point down and said to him, oh, there's a bear down there. And she said, oh, really, there's a bear down there. And then she said, hey, and she says to her two children, say, hey, kids, look, there's a bear down there. And right after that, I got to talk to Sarah Palin a little bit, even though it wasn't very long. Then I headed off to work.
Hello, my name is Bobby Honey of the Hillbilly Honeys, and here's my bear story. I was living up at Fame Campground. It's been a great summer up there. On this particular occasion, one of our campers, she was pregnant, and her water broke. And apparently, the baby was premature, and she was flown out on a jet plane to be sent to a hospital in Anchorage. But the bears caught a whiff of her, her birthing fluids, and it sent them into a rage. Unlike what we've seen at Thane Campground, I mean, we've had bear activity, but once they got to the birthing fluids, they were sent into a madness, and they destroyed three of about the 20 tents we have. I think in all this summer, they've destroyed like five of the 20 tents out there, but on this day, something got into the bears. They destroyed like three of the tents. Luckily, mine was unscathed, but a few of my unlucky neighbors, yep, that was the consequence of the bears getting to the birthing fluid. Anyhow, we've had great success in keeping the bears away since then, using pots and pans. And once the fish came, once the salmon started running, you know, they were no longer interested in our canned beans and are more interested in fishing. So have a great day.
My name is Becky Carls, and this is my story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Once upon a time, a little girl named Goldilocks with lovely long blonde hair lived next to a big woods. In this woods, a great big papa bear, a sweet, svelte mama bear, and a tiny little baby bear lived in a house. Goldilocks went into their house while they were out for a walk, waiting for their oatmeal to cool down. Mama bear overcooked the oatmeal again. Goldilocks tested the bowls. The first one was too hot, the second one was too cold, but the third one was just right. I'm going to tell you the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. However, I am not telling you the fairy tale. Now, in these bear tales, I am Goldilocks when I had lovely long blonde hair, and the Three Bears are three of the bears I've encountered over more than 30 years in Juneau. The first bear story is the scariest. One day, I was sitting in a chair in my driveway and potting up plants in the soil I had mixed with vermiculite in my wheelbarrow. I usually plant only about 50 pots every spring with seedlings I start and raise myself. It was a lovely sunny day with a light breeze, and I was enjoying hanging out on a day that was not too hot and not too cold, but just right. I had covered some recent garden transplants with newspapers and could hear the papers rustling in the breeze, or so I thought. But then I heard a loud snapping noise. I turned around and, oh my gosh, not 15 feet away was a bear snapping its jaws at me. It is considered a very bad sign if a bear snaps its jaws at you. That is a final warning. But this episode ended well. As soon as I turned around, Mama Bear started moving away. She appeared to have been angry that I was ignoring her, and she wanted to get my attention. Well, she did a very good job of that. She had been feeding on the seed stalks of the skunk cabbages I let grow in my garden. Now I chop down the seed stalks before they ripen so I don't get visits from the bears. A few years ago, about midsummer, I was going for my noontime walk on the flats near the federal building. One house on my route has a yard that is raised up about 12 inches, held up by a cement retaining wall and topped by a 4-foot picket fence. On this day, I noticed just the curly black fur on the wiggly backside of an animal that was not too tall and not too short, but just right to be a standard black poodle. Its head was right up to the fence, so I could only see the back half. I hadn't noticed a standard poodle in that yard before, but the wiggling and lack of barking seemed to indicate it would be a friendly dog. So I thought I would pat it on the head when I walked by. Before I patted the dog, I looked through the fence into two big, round, brown eyes. I thought to myself, not a dog. Just keep walking. Baby Bear appeared to be a two-year-old when he hopped up on the corner of the fence and headed in the opposite direction. That is as close as I want to get to a bear. Finally, one spring day several years ago, I made a delicious batch of rhubarb crunch. Rhubarb crunch is a dessert in which the rhubarb is mixed with sugar, cornstarch, water, and vanilla, and baked in a pan between two layers of rolled oats, brown sugar, and butter. I ooped with the rhubarb mixture and used twice as much vanilla as usual in the recipe. It smelled absolutely delicious while it was baking in the oven. But you can really burn your tongue on hot rhubarb. So when it came out of the oven, I set it out on the front porch to cool. The kids and I made jokes about how some bear would come along and put his paw in to take a taste and then go hot-footing it down the road because it was too hot. So we sat around playing a board game, and in about half an hour, I figured the temperature would be not too hot and not too cold, but just right. Imagine my surprise when I opened the front door, and there was Papa Bear, just 2 feet from the door, looking around the edges of the pan of rhubarb crunch. I screamed and slammed the door, and he ran off. Then I started laughing because of the joke we had made earlier. Papa Bear must have decided the temperature was just right, too. When I told the kids there really was a bear, they would not believe me that there had been a bear right outside the front door. However, when I showed them the pan of rhubarb crunch, their eyes widened and they believed. The moral of these stories is, if you have Goldilocks, watch out for the bears. My name is Becky Carls, and that was my bear story.
Do you enjoy folk music? Looking for something fun to do on a Wednesday night? Then tune in to Friends and Neighbors, 7 to 9 p.m. on KRNN 102.7. Hi, this is Mike Sicarius, host of Friends and Neighbors. Together we'll explore and enjoy the breadth of folk music, from blues to ballads to banjos and much more. So kick back and relax this Wednesday evening with friends and neighbors, 7 to 9 p.m. on KRNN 102.7.
Ponytails and Levi's, cowboy boots and ball caps, turn our horses on a dime. Girls like us drive a pickup and got ourselves a good dog. We don't need ribbons or pearls. Girls like us are cowgirls. Cowgirls ride. You'll never see us cry. We fall, we may break. We never lose our faith. We were born that way. Clouds in the sky, driving with the radio up, singing along with Patsy Cline. Girls like us stick together in good times and bad times. We're ready to take on the world. Girls like us are cowgirls. Cowgirls ride. You'll never see us cry. We fall, we may break. We never lose our faith. We were born that way.
It's 3:57, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AO at 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoon at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Here is the music of a new CD from Sarah Pierce entitled Bring It On.
We fall, we break, we never lose our faith. We were born that way. Cowgirls ride, we ride.
Tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Ruth Trostle about Friday's pirate-themed concerts by the Juneau Student Symphony. We'll also find out about the Valley Library's 39 Clues party this Saturday at the Valley Library. And Ed Schoenfeld will be interviewing NPR's Peter Kenyon prior to Peter's talk before the Juneau World Affairs Council tomorrow night at 5 o'clock at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. It's tomorrow at 3 here on KTOO News, Juneau. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers, areas of fog later on with low temperatures around 49 degrees and light winds. Mostly cloudy skies with areas of fog predicted for Thursday morning with a chance of showers and high temperatures around 62 degrees with light winds. Thursday night, slight chance of rain in the evening, then rain likely later on. Forecast for Friday, looks like in Saturday and Sunday and Monday through Tuesday, a chance of rain is predicted. Thank you for tuning in to June afternoon. Have a great evening. Coming up next is All Things Considered.